The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. While some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings, Jesus said, "All that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down." Then they asked him, "Teacher, when will this happen? And what sign will there be when all these things are about to happen?" He answered, "See that you not be deceived, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and 'the time has come.' Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end." Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues from place to place, and awesome sights and mighty signs will come from the sky." The Gospel of the Lord. It used to be, you know, that we would get the challenging gospel passages on Friday when we had the kids for Mass on Friday. And now, of course, with our 3 and 4 year olds, we get the scenes of the apocalypse. You know, it's like, this is great for you guys. This is like, it's a baptism by fire. I don't want to know what their minds think of what I just said. Okay. The apocalypse. And, you know, if as I was making my way through that gospel passage, you were thinking, "Oh my gosh, I think we're living in the end times," you have to go back and listen to my homilies from weeks previous where I called you out for being selfish, if that's what you thought. Okay, so I don't really want to start there, but I will start there. I think that, again, we put this in its proper context. Jesus is talking to the people of his age, right? What is this? What is the ultimate sign of the country's coming to an end, or of the nation, I should say, the nation's coming to an end, Israel, is, of course, the temple being torn down. Okay, so what does that have to do with today? We can bring this up 2,000 years, interpret it in order to understand it and apply it, but this is not for us. And if, as you're sitting there, you're thinking, "No, Father, this is for us, these are the end times," again, please stop. Please stop. You're not helping anybody. You're not helping anyone. I mean, the idea that, look, even like this, I think this is one of the dynamics that we can examine and pull out for application in the passage is this, "See that you not be deceived. Many will come in my name saying, 'I am he, the time has come.' Do not follow them." There's even an exclamation mark there. Right? Do not follow them. So who are the people who are trading in fear these days? Do not follow them. How can it be? Who is trading in the kind of like apocalyptic imagination? Who out there is saying this is the end of the world? Do not follow them on Twitter, Facebook, or even don't watch those shows. Don't click those links. You know, these are clickbait artists. That's how they get paid, by the way. They get paid by your clicking on the link. They get paid by you watching the show. So don't do it. I mean, for the rest of our sake who, you know, we get drawn into it idly. We don't need the temptation. Please don't click those links. Okay? We don't need to support that industry at all. The kind of fear, apocalyptic imagery industry. And it's happening, okay? Now, if you don't realize that that's kind of in the air out there, blessed are you. Go back to the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are you who have not encountered clickbait, you know, fear traders, okay? So that's number one. But why is that so important? It's because fear and love cannot coexist. That's why it's so important. And your task is not to consume these sound bites of fear, it's your task to love and to love where you are. This is the challenge, right? Jesus, and I want to bring the passage up 2,000 years so we can look at it and say, yes, okay, there is the end of the world as we know it. Okay, it's not just that song, right? It's the end of the world. But it's the beginning of the new world. And that's the point, is that precisely because in Jesus, a new world opens up, the old world has to come to an end. And the opening up of the new world is both the conquest of love, it's the victory of self-giving love, and it's our participation in it. It's love conquering death, and then our living out that victory, Jesus' victory, by the power of his Spirit. That's all it is. There's no place for fear there. None at all. And if we find ourselves, right, dragged back into that place, tempted to follow people who are prophesying the end times, then what we have done is we found ourselves drawn back into the old world. The world that lives under the shadow of death. And not the new world that Jesus has opened up by his death and resurrection. Okay, so that's it for us. We have the choice, but we have the choice every day to live into the new world that Jesus has opened up. And we do it, of course, by opening our hearts in prayer. It's the most important thing we do is pray, because that's how we're drawn into that new world. And that's how we're given the strength of that new world, the power of the Spirit. That's how we receive Jesus into our hearts, so that we can be about his work in the world. So that, and again, be about his work, what I mean is love. Love, right? So again, there may be people masquerading in the world as leaders, telling us that we have to do this and that and the other thing and the other thing. And if we only do this and that and whatever, then we'll be good. Everything will be fine. Okay, if they don't start with love, and you're being transformed into the sincere, authentic embodiment of God's love that you were made to be, then they're still living in the old world. And you should not follow them. But if there's some sense of the fact that you can live into the new world by the power of love, and then you bring the victory of Christ's self-giving love to bear in this world now, to revitalize it, to revive it, and all the rest, then there's something there for you. There's something there for us. But here, turning our hearts over to God in prayer, right? Offering ourselves in the perfect prayer, the perfect offering of Jesus. He makes perfect our offering in the sacrifice. In this sacrifice, the sacrifice of Calvary, the sacrifice of the Mass. He makes our offering perfect here. So that by receiving his life of love, by receiving the Word made flesh for us again in the Eucharist, our whole life, our whole heart can be transformed so that we can live totally for his purposes. But my friends, do not lose track of the fact that we are talking about love from beginning to end. Do not try to convince yourself that you have any other agenda than love. It has to begin there and it has to end there. There may be particular things that you have to put your hand to, right? The duties of the day are terribly significant. And we have to give ourselves faithfully to the tasks that God has entrusted to our care today. All the boxes that we have to check in our daily life. Understand it. We have to do it, but we have to bring love there. We have to do them for God with the strength that he gives us. And we have to do them with hearts filled with gratitude for his love at work in us and through us. So do not be deceived. Our lives are about love, and that will be the measure, the standard by which we are judged. And that should be the standard by which we judge ourselves and our own efforts. I said, get to the end of the day, right? The examine prayer. Review the day. Where was I with Jesus? Where was I doing his work in the world? And where was I not? Where was I able to bring his love to life? And where was I not? And Lord, give me the strength that my whole life will be love, that I can live totally for you and for your purposes.